Hello, everybody. Welcome to the next episode of An Ordinary King. So today I have a really cool guest on. It's taken a little while for us to tee this up. There's a number of reasons why I won't really get into it. COVID one, but then again, 2020 has really stuffed everyone's life up, isn't it, in a little bit. So staying positive. Today's guest is Jeff Reglas. If you don't know who Jeff is, don't worry. Neither did I until I knew who he was, which doesn't make any fucking sense. He's a musician and an artist. He lives down on the surf coast of Victoria, and he's absolutely amazing. He did, if you grew up or had any t-shirts, whatever, from the 80s and the 90s, called Mambo, you'll recognize his artwork. He was one of the artists that was involved in that brand. He plays in an absolute bucket ton of bands that do really well. They've toured the world. He's a super interesting guy, and I was just so stoked and appreciative to sit down and chat with him. And finally, and I really enjoyed the chat. So sit down, buckle up, enjoy this one. I loved it. Thanks so much, Jeff, as well, for jumping on the podcast. Anyway, here he is, Jeff Reglas. How's everything going? What are you up to?
I'm just painting, and that's really, all the gigs have stopped, of course, and yeah.
That's crazy, isn't
it's
it?
I'm just doing artwork, really, yeah.
Yeah, nice. So,
which is okay. That's all right. That's really pretty much the same as it always was, really.
Yeah, so the lockdown hasn't really affected you too much?
Not too much. I almost feel guilty, because it's I live in an okay town, Aries Inlet.
Yeah.
You can still go surfing. We still go for walks, although we wear a mask now when we're walking, which is a bit of a drag. But
it's mandatory now regionally, isn't it, in Victoria?
Yeah.
It's just recently changed. Yeah, we're pretty hard locked down here in Melbourne. I could go surfing some weeks ago on the peninsula, but I just can't go anymore because of the...
No, you can't go. That's
yeah,
right.
And it sucks because there's been some really nice swell recently, and there's been some good weather for it, which is coming out of winter. But that's all right. For the greater good.
Oh, yeah, it is. Look, I hope they... I don't know. I kind of got my doubts. It's run so far now. I can't see how they'll rein it in now. It's like pretty bizarre.
Mm.
Yeah. I like to think they could, but I've got a scary feeling they won't. It's like, feels like, how could you, all those, it's just all those, every day there's, 300 or 400 new ones.
Yeah.
And how many people have they seen, You just know yourself. Even when you're keeping quiet, you still see a few people,
Yeah. Well, the worst tell for me was what happened recently in New Zealand, because they had back home, they had 102 days that was COVID free, and then everyone's like, all right, cool, and the rugby's back on, and everyone's out there, getting amongst it.
Yeah.
And then boom, they've had another stage
three
lockdown.
It's so bizarre, isn't it? Yeah. It's so weird.
Well, they think, one thing that they think is that it came over in a chilled shipping, like a chilled shipment from America. And they think that the virus, this is completely unsubstantiated, and I'm definitely no scientist at all.
Yeah.
So like, if there's anyone listening, just please don't take my word for it.
I've been thinking that myself. I was thinking, how long can it live on surfaces? Like when you buy something from overseas or anything. Because I've been getting stuff delivered in the mail, and you think, gee, I wonder, how long it lives on surfaces,
Yeah.
So they think it might have come
through,
because it likes cold weather too, doesn't it?
Loves it, yeah. Loves the cold weather. I think it stays dormant and all that sort of stuff, I'm definitely no virologist or epidemic. And if you think about it, that's also where, not most of, but you, in terms of like industrially speaking and people that get affected in industrial commercial sort of zones, it's always the meat plants or the cold packing plants
meat plants where it's freezing cold and they're standing close to each other too.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really.
Hey, look, was I meant to ring you on the landline or something like that, or?
Oh no, no. Well, I have. You sent me an email with, give us a call on this landline number, which is
Sorry,
that doesn't bother me, hey man. It's all good.
Yeah, look, I actually forgot it was today, and I was just painting, and when the phone rang, I was thinking, I wonder who that is. Yeah, but, yeah, okay, cool. I put everything down so I can do it.
Cool. Well, it's not the Queen. I'm sorry, bro. Hey, it's a good place. So first of all, I just want to say thanks so much for jumping on the show and just having a chat with us, man. It's I feel really privileged to chat to you about just about you. It's really cool.
Good on you. So are you going to sort of press record at a certain stage, or
I've been recording already.
Oh, you're just recording already?
I'm afraid that I'll miss right. that I'll that
well,
I
it took me quite it took me a minute at first to kind of get Kieran King. Now I get it.
So I guess if it's okay with you, I just sort of want to start with something that of going back in terms of, I just want to know how you sort of feel about this. I kind of guess, but going back, someone like yourself, I had no idea who you were until a good friend of mine that was chatting with Leo, he was like, oh, you got to chat to Jeff. And I was like, oh, who's Jeff? And he's like, do you remember the Mambo brand when you were a kid? And I was like, fuck yeah. He's like, well, he was one of the main artists on doing all the artwork on the t-shirts. I was like, fuck, get out of the town. I would love to. And so that was about a year ago that you and I think started emailing and trying to hook up. But you were in between different exhibitions and doing different commissions for different people and organizations and stuff.
Yeah, that was a bit really busy year last year, actually.
Which was great, which is excellent.
This year, because of the lockdown, it's a lot calmer. Yeah, like half going on that's usually going on.
Is that nice, though? Yeah. Do you find that kind of nice, having a busy period?
It's actually quite interesting. the weirdest thing is stopping doing music. Like, I've been playing music every weekend for as long as I can remember. I think I've been doing 2 to 3 gigs every week for about, I think, about 40 years.
Wow.
And I've never stopped for this long. This is really weird to stop. But having said that, there's a part of me vague, especially at first, I realized, oh, my God, this is so much calmer. Because every weekend you kind of go, here comes the weekend. Okay, we better have a rehearsal. What songs are we doing? Okay, let's get them back into order. Even though you'd think you wouldn't need to rehearse, but you kind of do.
Yeah, you got to stay sharp. And
yeah, so we'd usually have a rehearsal on a Thursday or a Friday, and then we do the gigs. And the gigs are kind of like emotionally kind of stressful, they are. Like, you just don't know what people are going to be like and what noisy bar you're playing at and what's it like. So that's all completely gone, and I've actually suddenly realized half the gigs I do I probably don't enjoy that much anymore. I love music. I really love playing, but a lot of the gigs we do are pretty hard work I won't say too much, but there you go. So that's been a revelation, actually.
That's interesting.
I know a lot of people have found that in the coronavirus thing, that they've found their karma and they've had time to do things that they never have time to do, you know, like house repairs, gardening, walking, just sort of karma things, whereas it's usually I'm just running from one thing to another,
Yeah, so do you think this has definitely allowed you, as you said, to reassess, and do you think you'll implement those changes to yourself moving forward to whatever normal is?
I say that I'll implement them, but Vic, my wife, goes, I bet you as soon as you get those same gigs asking you to do those same gigs, you'll probably say yes. And I'm scared that I probably will say yes, but there's a part of me thinking, no, I shouldn't. You know what? I'd already been feeling that way a little bit anyway the last 3 or 4 years. I'd actually been careful about gigs we did. I'm in another band called The Beachniks, and I'm in a band with my wife called Victoriana Gay. And I have been careful to not play at places where we're not the right band. Like, I really warn people. I go, look, we're not a covers band. And if someone rings up and they go, oh, we heard off a friend of a friend, you guys were great, And then I go, yeah, that was a good party. And what's this one? And they go, it's for this, this, and this. This, you know, like some business meeting or something, and they want background music. I go, look, we're probably not the right band. We don't do any covers. No covers. Oh my God. Okay. So I talk them out of it usually if I really think we're the wrong band. Whereas 5 years ago, I just would have gone, yep, we'll do it. Anything to do a gig, anything to get paid for it, I'd just do it. Now I'm a bit fussier, a little bit older, maybe. Just, yeah. And now this coronavirus thing has made me go, oh, yeah, that's very interesting. It's kind of like a clean slate. Yeah.
That's nice. I remember when I used to play in the old band that I used to, one of the old bands that we used to play, and we had a fairly similar experience when we were gigging about, we were doing a lot of gigs, we were doing about 3 or 4 gigs a week. We
Oh, yeah.
didn't play covers either. And we got given this gig that we're like, oh, yeah, we'll do this. And it was doing a gig one night for a 40th anniversary for one of the Hell's Angels clubs. And
Ooh,
we were like,
mate.
yeah, well, I sort of grew up, I didn't grow up in a gang environment, but I had a lot of friends that were in sort of club environments, if you know what I mean, by growing up in New Zealand. And so it's not
Oh,
exactly
okay.
something that I'm
Okay.
overly afraid of, or, you know, I'm not intimidated is probably the better way to put it.
Okay, good on you.
But I've had some really interesting conversations. But anyway, digressing. So we did
No,
we
okay.
agreed to do this gig for this 40th anniversary in Faulkner or something like that. And we turned up to this gig pretty early as we did to do a sound check, and we there's a band playing before us, and it's like a bikie band, and they're just doing the Angels, all the covers, all the, you know, Aussie rock covers and the classics, the 80s, 70s, 80s, 90s classics, hard rock. And
I can just imagine,
yeah, and we're like, oh God. And it was pretty good, and they were amazing, you know. And then we get up, and I don't think they realized what we that we didn't do covers, and we had like 150 pretty mad, angry-looking bikers, like standing, folding arms in front of us on the stage, like looking at us, going, "What the fuck are you guys? Do you know where you are?" And it was like, I remember at the end of the gig, because we just looked at each other and we were like, "Oh fuck it, we're either going to die or we're going to be all right." You know, that was the
So you
two
just
sort
kept
of.
going.
We just kept going, and then we got to the end of it, and one of the old guys pulled us aside and he's like, "Look, before you come to these things, you kind of got to know who your audience is." And we were like, yeah, it was a bit of a short, but we didn't really know. But there was just no communication. I mean, it was a bikie gang, but fuck, that was pretty interesting.
Oh, look, I'd be very nervous. I have actually played at a Hells Angels, one of their Broadford concerts in the 80s. And
Oof.
I was in this mad band, and luckily the band was so mad. It was like a ska band, like a punk ska
Yeah,
band, and
fun.
they knew who we were, so we were fine. We didn't have to change our show. Our show was pretty out there, but I just remember the things I saw that day, and they were like, well, they were sort of very friendly to us. Like afterwards, they wanted to kind of like make us like their house band or something, and I was
Oof.
like, oh my God, I actually left the band. It freaked me out that much because
Right on.
we sort of had them hanging around us quite a bit, and they scared all the other punters off. And I mean, I saw them just do things like as we were driving off, I just saw this guy punch his girlfriend just straight in the face, and she just hit the dirt, you know. And I thought, these guys are really bad, really bad.
Yeah, they're beyond
And
loose.
I think I quit the band the next week because they started saying all these other things that were going to happen with the Hells Angels, and I went, not me,
Yeah, not
I'm
into
out.
it. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, some of the people involved, I think, just don't quite have the same moral compass as some other people, I guess. I'm not quite sure how to put it. It's pretty shocking what they, especially the 80s. The 80s was a little bit more full on than it is now. You know, like there was quite a,
Probably.
you know, in Australia, I know the gang wars are pretty prolific across the country. You know,
Kind of had that, and there were just heaps of drugs and been what, yeah, whatever. But I just went, oh my God,
yeah, pretty interesting times, man.
Yes.
Well, oh God, where am I going? So I guess going back, speaking of, actually, it's probably not a bad place to go, but I just, one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you was sort of unconsciously to myself, without knowing who you were, like going back again to Leo, our friend, mutual friend Leo, and without knowing who you were, I did a lot of thinking recently since we remade contact, you and I, and decided to do this chat today. And I sort of got a thinking about, you know, what am I going to talk about? Because we have a few things in common in terms of music and surfing and not art. Art is one thing that I wish I could do. I just can't. But I think...
Well, it's good that we've... Even just chatting about music just then is very interesting. Even that is interesting, you know?
Yeah, well, it's just art.
I'm glad we've said what we've said already, so there you go.
Yeah, I mean, I always look at it as just music for me. I've always looked as it's just like art. It's just another form of communication, you know, like it's...
Very similar.
Yeah.
It's really similar to art. The two things go together really easily,
I think they do. Like, and I always think of music as, in terms of globally, it's the only language that the entire sort of world speaks collectively is music. You can be anywhere in the world and you can relate to someone that doesn't speak the same tongue as you on something. I remember in New Zealand we were practicing, we had like a little laneway that we would practice in, and we were practicing the same night that Pink Floyd, Roger Waters, was playing at one of the stadiums around them. We could hear Pink Floyd. It was pretty amazing. But and we had these two Israeli backpackers come up, and they must have found us through these laneways, and they were like, oh, can we have a jam? And so jam with these two Israeli guys. It was just the most amazing thing to be able to just connect with people, completely different cultures, speak completely different languages, but just connect on the same level, just on music, and just listen to each other in a different way.
Absolutely.
And, you know, there's something that I really love about music.
Yeah, look, I have been overseas a few times, and that was really interesting, not being able to speak the language with certain groups of people, but being able to play music together,
That's really cool.
That's kind of fun, because there'd be a big link on that, and you'd realise you didn't have to say that much, actually.
No.
Me and my wife Vicky were in, we did this sort of European tour about 6 years ago, and we ended up in this, well, the main part of the tour was in Bayonne, which is near Biarritz in the south of France. And there is surf there and stuff, but that wasn't why we were there. We were there to do these gigs. And they gave us an old house to stay in Bayonne. And we met this other band, which was kind of like a rock band, kind of like a sort of punky rock band. But we had jams with them and really connected with them, and we'd hang out with them, and seriously, half of them could not speak one word of English. Some of them could, but they'd sometimes turn around and say, hey, I'm so sorry, man, we're not speaking your language. And me and Vicky, I said, I don't care, actually. It's just good to be here with you guys. You know, it's just, I don't actually mind not talking. Mm. It's fine. And, you know, you just talk a lot. You probably talk a lot of shit when you get pissed anyway, like I do. You know, so it was easier just to sit there and just hear them talking in French, and just, and then doing music together was a better form of contact, I thought.
Yeah, and just these weird little towns in the south of France. It would have been really cool. It would have been a really amazing experience.
It was amazing. Yeah, it was an amazing tour. It was, we didn't really make much money from it, but it was really like just an adventure, I guess. We got it through playing. We played in New Caledonia, which is a French island off Australia, and the guy there said, "Do you want to go to Biarritz?" And we went, "Yeah," but it really didn't make monetary sense, but it made big adventure sense. It made that, yeah.
Well, you got to feed that part of the soul, man. You got to feed
you
it.
You do.
Yeah.
You do. Yeah.
So,
you were going to ask me something about art, I think.
I think so. So I guess.
Or what was it?
I guess for me personally, growing up as a child, as a young kid, art isn't something it's not something that I really think about that sort of influenced me as a person that I am today. But maybe subconsciously it did, because while things like the classics weren't all that engaging, I don't think many kids maybe engaged or related to the classic artists, you know, like Monet or Michelangelo or even like the Mona Lisa. You're aware of these things as a kid, but you don't relate to them because you just don't have an understanding.
That's right.
I think one of the things that I was thinking about recently was the importance of cultural, of not just, I don't mean like indigenous culture or country culture, but I mean like culture as a child. One of the things I think that really sort of gives you this sense of freedom and the sense of what art brings is something as benign as like a t-shirt, for example, that's got like a farting dog on it. Or do you know what I mean? And then so you get this sort of pop culture sort of affinity. I think that kind of, that sort of something to grab onto or something to relate to, something that's really silly and stupid and those kind of absurdist things as a kid, that sort of gives you that freedom to explore different parts of life. And I think that's one of the things that for me growing up, I'm really grateful for you. You're kind of, in a way, like a bit of a subconscious sort of inspiration way to me, because that was a side of life that without those kind of pop culture elements that you brought, or someone that, like the cartoonist for Ren and Stimpy, or I wouldn't have been able to, or I might not have had the fearlessness to express myself in a musical way, or just painting my clothes, or being different from other people, or talking in a different way, or communicating with people in a different way. And I just being able to talk to you today is just a really nice for me. It's a nice, I get to look back on my childhood and go, well, I am the person I am today partly because of the fearlessness and the confidence that artists like yourself gave me to push to go into life without a fear of judgment, of being, you know, weird and obscure. Well,
look, I think I'm just from like a suburban, like the suburb I'm from in Melbourne was kind of like a pretty tough suburb. Not saying I was tough, because I wasn't, but I lived in Glenroy, and which is part of Broadmeadows, which is like pretty, in the 60s and 70s, was really heavy and lots of Sharpies and skinheads, and I couldn't wait to leave, actually. But and there was no real art. But I always knew I liked cartoons on the TV, like Warner Brothers cartoons, which, when you mention Ren and Stimpy are like the extreme example, I reckon, of Warner Brothers. Warner Brothers had this kind of sarcastic, grown-up adult humor, really well drawn, but not drawn like Walt Disney, which was too well drawn and sort of sucky and straight. So Warner Brothers and IPA cartoons, that they were like this other branch that kind of had this weird sense of humor, and I remember latching onto that as a kid. And the other thing I liked was Big Daddy Roth, which was these hot rod t-shirts, which used to see them in Glenroy, and I always thought, oh, that's art. You know, like I didn't think serious art. I wasn't attracted to art galleries as much or serious art. I'd just be attracted to this lowbrow, cartoony art. And I could kind of draw as a little kid. And really I've just taken it from there. And the way I've got into it was not via really going to arts college or by painting. It was actually via doing T-shirts for bands. Like all the bands I was in, I'd do their poster, and I'd do T-shirts, and so then I learned to screen print. I thought, I'm gonna actually learn to screen print so I can actually sew board shorts up and like print yardage designs rather than just printing on a T-shirt. I'm going to go the next step and learn how to do actual fabric. This is still before I went painting, and I hadn't ever sold a painting and didn't even do paintings. So it was all just art for a reason, like art on a surfboard, art on someone's petrol tank, art on things, and mostly for friends and mostly for no pay. And then it went to bands, and from bands I jumped to clothes, doing clothes. And this is pre-Mambo. And so when I did get a job at Mambo, I actually understood the yardage process, how you do repeating patterns that join together and become one long sheet of fabric, and they can chop that fabric up into board shorts stuff like that. I understood how to do that. So, and still, I still hadn't done a painting and sold a painting, and I didn't do that until I was about I think I was about 28, 29. I had an exhibition because of the band I was in. The band I was in had a lot of artists in it, and they used to just have these exhibitions, just really ad hoc, kind of low key exhibitions in old shops that were like, I think the first exhibition I ever had was in a shop that had ended its lease, and this guy Henry found out and he said, "Oh, can we have that shop for 2 weeks?" And they got it. So for 2 weeks, we had this exhibition of about eight different people in the exhibition.
Oh, wow.
That was my first exhibition, and I sold stuff, and that kind of blew my mind because like I had little kids, I had a mortgage. And I wouldn't have kept on doing it if it hadn't have sold, but it did sell. And then I think my first solo show was other at Tommy Gannon's framing shop, like a framing shop next door to the Black Cat in Fitzroy, in Brunswick Street,
I know the Black
Fitzroy.
Cat, yep.
And I think I sold a lot of stuff at that. And then the next one I had was at Mario's Cafe, which they still have exhibitions to this very day. But I had an exhibition. One of the very first exhibitions there was me. I think I had the second one. And that was 1989, I think. And I sold a lot. And I actually sold to people that I didn't know. Like they didn't know that I played in a band, which before that I always thought, oh, people just buy these paintings because I play in a band. And the band was quite well known. And I thought, you're just doing it as like a bit of a fan thing. And I didn't really know if my art was really that good that it could just stand on its own. But that show at Mario's, I sold paintings to people from overseas, even like an American guy bought a painting and I went, wow, okay. And that was it. I've never stopped painting. So I just basically just kept painting, kept on having exhibitions ever since, nonstop. Yeah.
So, do you think this is something that from a young age, this is something that you loved doing versus something that you could do, or was it the other way around? You didn't necessarily love it, but you were something, oh, I can just do this, so I'll do it for a mate, like the surfboard or the fuel tanks.
Yeah, I could do it, and it was pretty basic, but I did do stuff on people's boards, and some people have still got some examples of that from a really long time ago, from when I
Wow.
was like 13, 14. There's little examples of it here and there, but and when I look at it, it's pretty bloody rough, pretty basic, pretty bad, but just good enough just to get by. But I was going to say the thing is, I didn't, the suburb I was from, I didn't know anything about art. I didn't even know you could do art. I didn't even have the concept of artist in my head. I couldn't even imagine how you could do that. And I didn't even want to do it. My dad was a builder, and my mum painted a tiny bit just as a hobby. So there was at least that. And my dad was good at drawing designs for houses, which is interesting because Reg Mombassa, who worked for Mambo and who's a pretty famous Australian artist, his dad was a builder too, and he always said he got his sense of perspective off his dad. And I think maybe I got that too, of dad used to map out like sort of be like a home trained architect. My dad was. He'd do, plans, and he understood a bit of engineering and he understood mathematics. So he could kind of plan things out, and I'd always look at those things and think, and then dad would be building a house somewhere and I kind of take it in. And now I do kind of a lot of woodwork too. I do a lot of wooden sculptures and wooden art that hangs on the wall. So that I think is a real throwback to my dad. I really like having a workshop where we've got power tools and we've got hand tools and we've got chisels and we can do stuff like that, which actually is a really interesting thing, and I've been getting into that more and more the last few years. Yeah.
I absolutely love working with wood. That's one of the my fondest memories that I have growing up as a kid is my grandfather used to be a really good he did all kinds of things actually. He did fermentations as well, where he'd make wine, terrible wines that he would trial on my mother. And he also did a lot of furniture building and
Yeah, that's
that's one of
cool.
the cool
Yeah.
things that I remember is that my grandfather always smelt like wood and scotch. And
That's
so
good. That's good.
and
Yeah.
I just always have these I just absolutely love working with wood because you get this it's the sense of something. I mean, there's this environmental kind of like that for me, this modern perspective, there's this environmental renewable sort of feel about it where you're turning something that started as a seed that grew into something that's 30 meters high or 60 feet high, and then you're turning it into, you know, maybe it came off a house or it was a you know, a doorbarge, or and you're turning it into a bit of furniture, or in your case, the absurdest heads with the long noses.
I collect old wood. I find vintage wood, any wood that's getting thrown out, houses that are getting pulled down, but also trees. If I see trees getting chopped, and especially cypress trees
is gorgeous.
I try and get the logs to be delivered back to here. So that is quite hard to do. It's quite because they're just massively heavy. Well, if I was going to say too, if anyone out there is listening to this and they want to see examples of this, it's all on my Instagram, which is just Jeff Raglis Instagram, and you can see a sculpture which I think I've just sold, which was actually meant to go up to Currumbin to the Swell sculpture show, which is on the Gold Coast.
Oh, wow.
But because of the COVID thing, it's all ended up being really hard, and most of the interstate artists have pulled out. So I pulled out as well. They gave me the choice. They said, you can pull out because it's just too hard. And they didn't get the funding to help us get the stuff there. And I went, okay, so I pulled out and I put it up for sale on my Instagram, and I think I've sold it like in one day, which is pretty amazing.
It's pretty cool,
because it's not an easy thing to move around. It's like probably about 200 kilos, it's kind of a bit of a surf art one because it was going to Currumbin. So, yeah. But if you want to see that, go on my Instagram and you'll see it.
Yeah, I'll definitely put links and all that sort of that stuff at the end of the show. Like, I'll put that stuff in the description so that people can check it out, because your Instagram's amazing. It's got heaps of little bits and pieces of music and all the art and just the daily stuff that you're up to. It's really cool. I love checking it out and seeing what you're doing. It's some of those sculptures are amazing. I'm really enjoying them.
You know, it's funny because people put up like a version of their life. You don't put up the bad stuff. So I often get people going, your life looks amazing. And I think my life is pretty good, but you don't put up the bad shit, do you?
No, God, no. That's just not the done thing, man. We just don't do that. It's always the best version.
No. So it makes your life look incredible.
Incredible. How do you think your life does look?
Look, I think I've, you know, I live at the beach, and there's a price to pay for that. There is the lack. I can go to Melbourne, but it's just, it's very hard to go to Melbourne these days because the traffic, and not right now. Obviously, right now you can't go to Melbourne because of COVID. But the last few years, going to Melbourne is not just this quick little decision you make and you go, I'm just going to go to Melbourne and get some art supplies. It's like a major trek through hours of traffic and really frustrating. And so just trying, and I, for a while, when we first moved down here, I used to go back and do gigs in Melbourne all the time, all the time. And then after a while, I realized, oh my God, that is so taxing. I get home at like 4 in the morning, and I would do it a lot. We had a residency at the Nightcat, and it went for about 3 years, and I used to get home at 4 every time and nearly be falling asleep at the wheel and be so tired the next day. And all that for what? For $100 each, you know, and you just go, oh, man. So I've tended to play more locally and in a different way. So there's a price to pay. You can't be here and be in Melbourne at the same time. So you can't be part of the Melbourne culture. You can't be part of the Melbourne music scene, not easily. You've moved to the country, so that's, you've got to go with it. So there's two sides to it, you know, like, but for a healthy life, it's a great life down here. Yeah, it's beautiful. It's beautiful country. It looks good. You know, it's very soothing to your soul, I guess.
It's quiet during winter.
It is. It's quiet during winter. I think, look, I lived in Melbourne just playing in bands for about 15 years straight. Yeah. I mean, I'm born in Melbourne, but then I moved to the coast, and then I joined a band down on the coast that actually wanted to move to Melbourne. So I went, I'll come back to Melbourne because it actually got a little bit boring on the coast, I must admit, when you're 21. And I thought, all right, I'll go to Melbourne and we'll try and make it. And so 15 years I went from band to band to band and had a great time, had an amazing time, and made my music much. If I had just stayed on the coast, I reckon I'd be a pretty average musician. But
that's interesting.
Moving to Melbourne made me a lot better, like playing with a lot a lot better players, you know, players that could kind of play jazz. And down here, there's no one really like that. It's kind of more basic kind of music down here, really, I think.
Yeah, I remember watching once, there was like an exhibition they did at the, I'm pretty sure it was either the ESPY or the Vineyard, was one of those two institutions. And I remember watching they had on like a bunch of bands and musicians that come up from the Surf Coast. And one of them was this incredible blues slide guitarist. I can't remember what his name was.
Xavier Rudd,
Nah, it
Xavier.
wasn't Xavier, but it was. I can't remember the guy's name. He had short hair. I just remember this guy was absolutely tearing this guitar to pieces. It was like, man, he must go through a brass finger every gig. Just the amount of work he was doing. It was incredible. It was amazing to watch. And he was actually, I remember he was one of those moments where I was like, fuck, this is, like every now and then you watch a gig or you see something or you're a part of something, it just sort of reignites something inside you. And that was definitely one of those moments for me where I was like, all right, back on the horse and giddy up and
Yeah,
move
look,
forward.
I get look, I look, there is good players down here. I probably shouldn't say that it's more basic, but it isn't as probably there's no jazz scene down here.
No.
And I'm not really purely jazz at all, but I've always been in bands that verged towards a bit of jazz,
Yeah.
and there'd be some players in the band that were really good at jazz, and I wouldn't be I'd be kind of in awe of them, but you'd learn so much of them. You just had what's that and how'd you do that and what's that chord, and you know, compared to down here's more probably more rock and
Yeah,
blues
for sure.
and so yeah, like that, like you said, detuned slide guitar, that's you know, which yeah,
I think there's
it's a
just a
different kind of
lot
thing.
less, because you don't have the diversity in music down there, you just don't have the same competition that you've got in Melbourne. I just think that's
No,
indicative of
and that
any.
competition makes a huge difference,
It
doesn't it?
does. And
Yeah,
it's not as
it
though
really
it's a
does.
competitive kind of we're better than you. I mean, I think there's a little bit of that goes on. I remember,
There is, but
yeah.
it makes you really lift your game when you're with a whole lot of play. I actually find the Melbourne music scene is very friendly in general, whereas
I
I
agree.
find in because I've toured around Australia lots of times, especially the last few years with Vicky, we've toured a lot. And I actually found other, this might sound weird, but other country town musicians were usually unfriendly to us and very competitive. Like, who are you coming into our town, showing us what you think you know, or something like there would be a definite weird competitive vibe. Whereas
Yeah, there's a
Melbourne, I find people are really open because they're usually shit hot for one thing, the Melbourne players, and they're not threatened by you. They're not threatened at all. They just want to see what you do that might be different or pleasing to them,
Yeah.
you know. Whereas I think in country towns, it gets all a little bit, can be too very close. It can be very close to your feelings or something. It's like, yeah,
I
it's
just,
hard to explain it,
well,
but
I totally get
isn't
with
it,
you.
I
I know
suppose?
exactly what you mean. I just think it's people feel like you're pissing on their turf. You know, like I
Yeah,
think that's what it
yeah,
is. It's just like you,
yeah.
I, and it's hard to be showed up. You know, to have someone come just wing on the breeze and
Yeah,
then, you know, set their shit up
into town,
and
come
you
into
know,
town
and you
and
look
actually be
good, you got
better
a
than the
nice shirt on
locals.
or something, you
Look,
know.
I've been in that situation where, oh, look, we played in Edinburgh at the Edinburgh Festival,
Yeah.
and there was a house band that their normal Friday night got taken over by the festival, and they were bitching at us. They were just like, they were there, you know, like they did the first set, I think, and then what was usually their night, but they just kept telling us in the breaks, you know, this is usually our night and you've taken our spot.
Oh.
And I go, yeah, well, we've come all the way from Melbourne and here we are, and we're only going to be here for 1 week. So what does it matter? And he goes, yeah, well, but they were just pissed off. They would just let us know. And I thought, wow,
Wow.
you can't be open to us because we've taken your spot that you do every Friday night forever, you know. And I sort of saw, I could see it from their side as well. It'd be like, imagine if we had some gig down here and, you know, there was a festival in Lawn and they go, well, that week you can't do it because these better bands are going to be on from Melbourne. You'd be a bit like, oh, fuck, you know,
Yeah,
excuse
but
me for swearing.
that's all right. We've got plenty of friends and friend. We've got plenty of fans in France, so they love it. But
That's good.
they have a really good Queenscliff Blues Festival. It's pretty mad.
The music festival, you mean?
Yeah. Isn't there like a bit of more of a bluesy, rootsy sort of feel down there at Queenscliff when they play down there?
No, it's just a general music festival, Queenscliff Music Festival, and then
Yeah.
there's the blues train. It's got a train that is only blues. Like you can't get a gig unless you play blues.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, so I mean,
Yeah.
it's, I mean, I you kind of got to expect if you come from a small town, you know, or you've secured your niche. Okay, so you're the band in the area, or you're the band in that venue, and like once a year, you've got these, you know, festivals that come in, and you know,
Sure,
you get these
sure.
outside people coming, and you've kind
Hey,
of, I
look,
think.
that thing I was just gonna say, look, I think, oh, it's kind of a hard thing to explain in a talk like this, but
Try.
yeah, you have to be open to outside influences when you live in a small town. But look, the thing is, the band I was in down here, which I still am in, the Beatniks, we've been going, I think, for 25 years. Down here,
Congratulations.
something ridiculous.
Yeah.
And for a while, we were incredibly popular. And we were like, also, we ended up doing about 1,000 weddings, 1 million weddings. I don't know. We became like a wedding band, which wasn't intentional, but just happened. And we ended up being pretty good at that. But we'd do our own kind of thing and it
Yeah.
would kind of work. But I feel now we're kind of older guys. We still play. And people still love us, but I kind of feel like our time has kind of come and gone a bit. But when people still see, we still try and do something that's fresh and contemporary. We don't just sit on our old kind of laurels, and we don't do many covers. So when people see us and enjoy us, it's still a great feeling, you know. And I think we had this advantage that there weren't, because I play trumpet. There wasn't many trumpet players in where around this area that I live in, so we were the only band that kind of had a bit of a horn thing going on, you know.
Yeah, that's
And
cool.
also because I've got a Melbourne connection, I'd also get Melbourne people to come and guest with our band, so people would really like that I'd have, you know, some incredible keyboard player come and guest with us,
It
or another
freshens
horn
things up
player
as
come and
well.
guest. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was a good thing, but I can sort of see that maybe our time has kind of come and gone, but that's okay. It's all natural.
Is that
Yeah.
something that you feel? Do you believe that? Do you think that?
Oh, well, I don't think I look, see, I've been doing well. I don't think it myself, but I think other people might think it, and I think fair enough. We've been here a long time, but the other thing is, I do this other thing with my wife,
Yeah.
and we've done 5 albums. We've toured around Australia. We've toured around the world. And we're doing another album right now, but we've had to stop because of COVID. We can't go to Melbourne anymore to record it. So
Oh, you're
we've
recording
stopped
Melbourne, yeah.
halfway. Well, we're not even halfway through it. We're about a quarter of the way in, and we're doing it with Shane O'Mara. Do you know Shane
Oh, the
O'Mara?
name rings a bell. It's not Sonic, is he? He's
He's a producer, but he's an incredible guitarist. He's an incredible kind of lead rock guitarist,
Yeah.
but he's a producer. He's got a studio called Yikesville. In Yarraville, and so we've been doing. We started at Yikesville, and we're going to do like an EP with him, and then we're going to do an EP with this other guy, Bruce Hames, over in Northcote.
I know
So
Bruce Haynes.
they're all new songs, and I do feel totally current with that kind of stuff. I don't feel like we dwell in the past. I don't dwell in older style music. I don't kind of go, oh, I really hate it when people my age, which I'm 61. I really hate it when people say to me, oh, the best music was when we were young, though, when we were 21. I go, no, it wasn't. But the best music is just forever and ever. It's always reinventing. It's always,
Yes.
every era is a good era for something, you know?
Yeah, I mean
So
there was
I
a
don't
weird patch
believe
in
that shit.
2000.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I always think that the music is really timeless, you know, like and it always like even when you've recorded a song and it's never complete. You're always changing things up and you're always trying to freshen it up and you're adding bits and taking bits away and it's always mainly, I mean, we always used to do that just to try to keep things interesting and stay
Keep it
relevant
interesting,
for
yeah.
ourselves
We
more
did that with
than
us. We did that with our older songs too, with the Beatniks, because we kept playing at these particular bars in Lorne for years. We had residencies for years, which Leo would have seen us at. We would always do our songs in a completely new way. We'd suddenly do a song in 3/4 and do it super soft or a super acoustic version, and and just change things right around so that it just kept our interest. And then we'd go, hey, that's actually better that way. Like, we should have re-recorded it that way. But anyway, I digress. All I mean is we just never just played our old hits because we didn't have any old hits. We just kept on doing whatever.
And reinventing
I feel with
things.
With Vicky, I'm writing more songs now than I ever have, really, which is unusual. I kind of thought.
Do you know there's actually scientific evidence out there that supports that? And I really only can speak for males because I think that's part of the study that I looked at. Sorry, all the wonderful women out there, but there's you have two creative spikes in your life.
Really?
As a male, and one is from around that teenage years to sort of late 20s, early 30s. And then you have another spike around the 50s, so late 40s through to 60s, you have another creative spike. And I think that's got a lot to do with, so in your younger years, you've got this fearless kind of invincibility take on the world, kind of. There's no limits. There's no bounds to the imagination.
Yeah.
You know, it's the sky's not even the ceiling. It's, you know, not even the moon. It's you, the universe is really your oyster.
I'm relating to what you're saying.
And then you have this sort of spectral kind of, you know, as you sort of jump into your mold and you become this person that you create, you mold for yourself, you know, and you walk into this world that you've created, and then you get to this point in your life, and I haven't got there yet, you get to this point, and this is a study speaking, this is not Kieran King, you get to this point in your life where you have this reflection, and you're like, you look back on your life, and it tends to be about the middle age, late 40s, 50s, 60s, and you look back and you're like, what the fuck have I actually done? Have I achieved what I wanted to achieve? And do I feel like I need, you know, am I happy? Am I not happy? And where am I in my life? And you have this sort of reimagining. And then there's this new hormonal chemistry sort of situation starts going on in your brain, and you have this next sort of creative surge. So and your life, and that's physiologically speaking.
I really agree with what you're saying, because I actually had a real, not a midlife crisis, but a lot of artists have this thing. After I worked at Mambo, I kind of went into a 10-year bit of a slump, I reckon. Mm. And my music was fine, and I did write tunes in that time, and I was in a band called the Feeling Groovies, and we were kind of like a funk band. And when I listen back to the albums we did with them, I think they sound fine. They could be better, but there's a couple of tunes that are real killers that I still do to this very day, and people request them, and people know those tunes. So
that's cool.
It wasn't like a totally dead period, but my painting I struggled with. I think my paintings from that period of 40 to 50, when I look at those paintings, I don't really like them very much. I want to destroy them when I see them. A lot of them, not all, but a lot of them, I'd like to burn them.
Wow. Then
the weirdest thing is, from about 50 to now, I've had a really good run, and I think my painting is finally what it should be. It's much more a condensed version of all the things that I've been doing. And I've been able to simplify it, and it's a bit more abstract. It's a bit more grown up. And the tunes that I've just written, some on my own, some with my partner Vicky, and some together, I think these tunes are really good tunes. They're probably the best tunes I've ever written.
Oh,
so, which is
so
unusual, because
cool.
I kind of thought, gee, I look at someone like Paul McCartney, and I think he kind of got worse as he got older. But mind you, he wrote millions of good tunes. But the last, say, 20, 30 years, the tunes aren't that good. And I thought, oh, I wonder when that's going to happen to me. Am I going to suddenly just go dirt and go write bad tunes? But maybe not. Who knows?
Yeah, there's a bit of that goes on. Like, I do that myself, where I put myself up against people in a sort of – and it's kind of a comparison, you know, where you're – Like what you just said with Paul McCartney, you just sort of like, oh fuck, I hope I don't go down that, or I hope I keep creating stuff, and you kind of put this sort of awkward pressure on yourself without sort of trying to do it, you know.
Yeah, I think the hard thing with him is that the tunes he wrote when he was young are so incredible.
Yeah, they're amazing.
It doesn't even matter if you never write another tune. So I guess that's a really hard thing to keep. It would be almost impossible to keep up that kind of quality. And that that momentum as well. So, every now and then I see him playing at something, and he's old and he's playing the bass and he's singing, and you think, oh, that's great that you still play live. The fact that you actually just get out there and do it, and you've got such an incredible back catalogue, it really doesn't matter if you don't write new songs, actually, for him. Mm. Yeah, you know?
I think about that with like someone like Roger Waters as well. Exactly the same thing. We had this incredible, you know, this amazing band around, the whole Pink Floyd, that move. It was just a movement, really, of this new awakening of music, of, you know, and not just music, but like as an audience member, as a consumer of what it is that person's creating or that band is creating, turning up to a venue not just to listen to music, but to be immersed in just in sensations and sound and visuals, and you know, and they just took. Maybe they weren't the first ones. That's true.
And I think that also comes back to what I was saying before about I really like it if people don't get stuck at this one era of when they were 21, you know, like, because I can just see so many good eras with Pastor. And it was great having kids too, because my kids would go, were in the early 90s, they were kind of into that more kind of hardcore kind of energetic rock. So there's that really grungy thing of Nirvana and just so many and great Aussie bands around the early 90s too. Like people go, oh, you know, the 60s and 70s were best for rock. Well, in a way, yeah, sure. But there's this incredible early 90s rock too, I reckon, you know, that people don't even – they've forgotten already. So anyway, all I'm trying to say is that I just reckon there's great eras that just keep coming and coming, you know.
What do you think you did recently or in the last 10 years that sort of given you this – what do you think you changed, or did you drop some sort of attitude that you had or an outlook that you had that sort of freed you up?
I think I condensed things. I think, hang on a second. Yeah. Okay. I think I have to go in a minute for
that's
one
right.
thing,
okay,
but
right.
I think I condensed everything to a more simplistic and brought certain things together to be one thing, kind of. That's hard to explain.
It's all good.
I just think the last 10 years, I kind of found, I could say that I just found what it is I was trying to do more. I wouldn't say I've totally found it, because I think I still, I keep, about 20 years ago, I used to look at the paintings and go, this is nearly something that I really want to say. This is nearly it. But then I just kept on being nearly it. But getting a bit closer all the time. And I think I have got closer to it, but maybe you never get there. And maybe that's good that you never get there, because you keep trying to get there. Yeah?
I completely understand.
But every now and then, just recently, I've looked at some things I've done and gone, that's great. I really like this one. Whereas I reckon I had a bit of a midlife crisis, and I'd look at the paintings and go, it's sort of okay, but it's not quite right. I'm nearly at something. I know it's just nearly there, but so I can't tell you how I did that. I guess just by keeping on painting. Like, I'm a pretty hard worker. I paint a lot, and I don't really have weekends or holidays, or I don't sort of see it like that, because I like what I do. I don't really see that I need time off from it.
Yeah.
So people go, how'd you do all that? And I go, oh, I just do it, because I don't do anything else.
I know exactly
what
you mean.
The only thing I do that's not working is maybe going for a surf. And even that, I don't go too often. I try and make it a balanced amount, you know?
Yeah. Well, is there anything, because I know that you're a bit pushed at the moment for time, but is there anything, like, I guess there's some, like, I know one of my nieces, just starting with, and she's pretty amazing, but there's a lot of people out there that maybe the first, is there anything that you want to say to someone that might be thinking of, you know, I'm good at this or I'm not good at this in terms of art?
Yeah. I'd say find your own style, find a style that's different to other people. That's a really important thing. If I see graphic art that kind of looks like other graphic art, I'm always like, oh yeah, that's pretty good. But it does look like a whole lot of other stuff I've seen. Mm. So that's how graphic art is. But if you're going to be if you're going to jump, look, if you want to make a living from it, sometimes you've got to do graphic and fine art, which I do. I do stuff for people, not that often, but I have.
Yeah.
And doing stuff for Mambo, that was kind of, that was a great job because it was very loose and it wasn't, they weren't like a bossy, straight company. But if I do ever have to work for like somebody else, like doing an ad for, I have done ads for other people and I find it quite hard because they have these kind of very straight ideas in their head. So I struggle with that. That's not really helping young people. I'm just saying, look, if you need to make a living from it, you probably have to do graphic as well as fine art. Or you can just jump straight into, I've got this style and I'm going to believe in that style and just, and work hard at it. Do a lot of it. That would be my advice, is don't just talk about it.
Do it. Yeah. Put some calluses on your hands. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we should, I think you got to go. So I just want to say, thank you so much for taking the time out of your life to sit down and chat with me for 45 to an hour. And it's a real privilege, an absolute privilege for me. So thank you so much.
Hey, Karen, thanks for thinking of me. And it was a pleasure for me too. It's always interesting to talk about why you do what you do, because you always learn a little bit of something from it.
You do. You do. And be keen to, when if this lockdown ever ends, get back down the coast and get back in the water.
Yeah, that'd be great. I'll look forward to meeting you one day.
Yep.
You're over the other side. Are you over?
Well, I cross over. I'm a bit transient, so I tend to go to the peninsula because that's where my friendship sort of base is. Mm-hmm. But then again, I've got a big friendship base on the west coast as well. So I float around a lot. I'm way too transient for a geographic sort of. This is me, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
Good on you. Mm. All right. I'll look forward to meeting you one day.
That'd be great. Cool. Thanks so much, Jeff.
Cheers, man.
See you, bro. Peace.
See you, Karen. Bye-bye.
And thank you so much for jumping on the podcast, Jeff Raglis. That is Jeff Raglis. Again, if there's if you want to check out any of the stuff that he's up to, or the bands that he's up to, him and his partner, it's really cool stuff. They're out on Spotify as well, but I'll chuck in some links in the descriptions below, so you can go to the Instagram page and check it out. His artwork is absolutely amazing, and it's really nice and different and kind of abstract. But then again, life is abstract as shit, and people are weird. We're all very weird, and I think that's kind of one of the things I like about his art. Anyway, thank you so much, Jeff. Thanks so much to everyone out there listening. I really appreciate it. Likewise, be cool, stay safe, stay calm, be peaceful to each other, be kind to yourself, listen, be patient, and be cool, and I'll catch you next time. Laters.